I'm joined here today by Daniel Miller, co-founder of Fundrise, a commercial real estate crowdsourcing platform. Thank you very much for joining us here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Our pleasure. I want to talk about the way that commercial real estate is raising equity today for deals and investment vehicles. We're seeing quite a bit of change on the landscape, particularly due to technology, but also regulatory changes. Fundrise is actually quite an intriguing model, and I'd love you to give me an idea of kind of how it works, because I think it offers a glimpse to what institutional capital raising could be in the future. Describe to me Fundrise and how it actually works.
Sure. So we began the company as real estate developers in D.C. And our family had done a lot of large transactions. We'd worked with institutional capital. And as my brother and I started developing smaller properties in D.C., we wanted to have a local community invested with us in the projects. We thought that, you know, these projects relate to the community, the tenants matter to the community. Let's reach out to people and see if they'd like to invest alongside us. So that was the idea about 3 years ago. The securities law has been extremely difficult to work through, but we eventually found a regulation that allowed us to do an effective state-qualified offering. So we could offer the project, interest in the project, to any resident of D.C. or Virginia at $100 a share, accredited, non-accredited. We created Fundrise as a vehicle to sell it online, to distribute the deal, to manage investors. And what we found was there's huge demand for people to participate and invest in projects that relate to them.
And obviously, is it largely aimed at the unaccredited investor currently?
Our view, it wasn't really about unaccredited or accredited, it was about location. And so real estate inherently is local. It's most relevant to people that live nearby or that work nearby or that grew up in that neighborhood. Those are the natural people to go out for investments. We've had people invest $50,000, invest $100, but we view them as the same type of investor. They invest because of the intangible aspect of it being nearby, of them knowing it, and that stepping in for a lot of the underwriting.
And when you're obviously doing the kind of capital raises, it's on a deal by deal, property by property basis. Kind of what's the minimum investment and kind of, you know, what's kind of the maximum?
So we've been doing them deal by deal to start because we thought, you know, we're selling branded real estate, basically. We're selling a product to people. If it's a specific deal, they tend to understand the project much better. If it's a fund, it tends to get harder, you know, it's harder for people to get excited about that. And so the first deal, as an example, we bought the project with $500,000 of equity. That equity was raised from accredited friends and family, our network, 25 to 100K checks. Closed on the property, filed that state public offering I mentioned, and then 6 months later we offered it to the general public and raised $325,000 from 175 people.
And how long did it take you to raise that capital?
It took 90 days for the first public raise, then the next one took 60, and the last one took about 45 days. So we're seeing, you know, rapid pickup, particularly because the first time people are offered this, they've never seen a real estate security, most people. They haven't invested directly. And even accredited, it's the idea of investing online and digitally, you know, people still want to get comfortable with it.
Talk about the traction and the investor interest.
Sure. So the first project we launched Fundrise as a platform at the same time we launched the project. So nobody really knew who we were. People had known us as developers in D.C., but we didn't have that much of a broader audience. So the first project we raised, I believe it was $32,000 in the first day. And the second project, we raised $164,000 in the first day. So for us, it was just, there's a huge group of people that are very excited about local investing, about investing in real estate that relates to them. And when I say local, it doesn't necessarily mean person from that community. It's somebody who has a tangible connection to that project.
Because one of the things that is intriguing about the model is, can this even be applied to the institutional market? Do you think that this is actually more of a local phenomenon, or actually this could be translated into a more institutional, perhaps even private equity model?
Sure. I actually think it pairs best with institutional capital. So as an example, we've got a grant from the Kresge Foundation in Detroit for us to figure out how to do public offerings in Detroit. They have a large fund. They've raised a $150 million debt fund. And they want some sort of local capital to be paired with that as they buy and renovate buildings. So I think intelligent institutional investors and GPs are going to realize that having local investment be part of the capital stack helps the asset. It helps sell hotel rooms if it's a hotel property. It'll help lease the property if it's rental. It's about getting people locally, you know, entitlement, zoning, involved in the project, whereas the vast majority of the capital is still going to come from, you know, where it always comes from, people with large-scale capital and institutional investment groups. Even on our first deal, a majority of the capital is from accredited investors.
But it's very much a kind of local investor base, rather than trying to take this to a national investor base.
We've Some of the deals have been available nationally. What we've found is that people, they just tend to invest locally, or conversion rate's much, much higher locally. It's even higher block to block. And so I think it's that inherently, if somebody's offering you an investment and it's in Ohio and you haven't been to Ohio, you don't know the city, you're much less likely to invest, particularly if it's online. If you knew, you know, the sponsor, and the sponsor's a close friend of yours, then that might stand for location because you have a relationship. We found, though, that when people are presented without a direct relationship to the sponsor and to the GP, it's the location and their knowledge of, I know that corner, I know that block, that gets them comfortable.
But what about risk appetite? These are local investors, some are unaccredited, some accredited, but on the lower end of the scale, how much appetite do they have for risk?
That's, I think, one of the most important things. The projects we were doing were, you know, edge neighborhoods, particularly H Street Northeast in D.C. It's similar to a Williamsburg. It's up-and-coming younger neighborhood. Most private equity firms didn't know that neighborhood, you know, and the deals were under $10 million. We wanted to do non-credit tenants. So that capital that we raised actually stepped in for tenant improvement dollars on a deal that most institutional money would not have financed. So I think it's really going to help the more creative use of real estate as opposed to just focusing on credit.
So applying this model, it's not just about trying to give unaccredited and accredited investors the core assets, you know, the ultra safe, let's clip a coupon, but actually you could actually take them further up the risk curve and do more opportunistic investing.
Yeah, I think that's where it fits best. I mean, there's a lot of people who already will invest in core real estate. So if you're buying a building downtown in New York, there are already huge pools of capital. This may help, but it helps a lot more with a $10 million project in Crown Heights or something like that.
And when it comes to kind of reporting, do you have any kind of liquidity requirements, or do you have to do kind of like daily NAVs? How much information do you actually have to give to the investors?
Right now, our default is it's fully illiquid. We've described, you know, real estate private placements and partnerships are always illiquid. We'll try to improve on that in the future. So somebody can transfer their shares to somebody else with our sign off. Over time, we're going to work on a secondary market, but right now, we're just happy enough that they could make an initial investment, and we'll work on secondary later.
Because that's obviously one point I wanted to raise, you know, where is the secondary market? Because is that something that would be needed for a more institutional, for the institutionals
sure.
to actually get into this?
I think, I mean, there's three main structures that the capital can go into. There's, you know, senior debt, and our view on senior debt is it's already almost a commodity. There's tons of debt available. If you have 40% equity, you'll get the debt. So focusing on crowdfunding or broad-based investments for debt, we think, makes less sense, and the yield, you know, tends to be pretty low. Mezzanine financing is where we think it'll be a standardized product. So we have between, you know, 60 to 85%. It'll be the exact same terms. The only thing that will change will be the interest rate, you know, whether it'll accrue or not, the term of the investment. So I think mezzanine financing could be a liquid product. And equity, we just don't believe the float is going to be big enough to be liquid in that sense, but maybe you'll get 80 cents as opposed to 50 cents. But I think equity, because there's not a set time frame and there's not a benchmark to measure it against, will be very difficult to make liquid.
And as you kind of grow fundraising, obviously as it's getting more traction in the market, what are your plans for expansion? How are you growing the company?
Sure. So we began as a development company. The first six projects we did were all our own deals. About 90 days ago, we decided the business was actually in scaling Fundrise as a platform because developers wanted to use the same tools we had, a way to post transactions, manage everything digitally, have electronic signatures, electronic funds transfers. There's a back-end software as a service piece to make distributions, to distribute K-1s, post-investor updates. So where we are now is selling basically a web software product to developers in the top 20 or 30 markets in the country. And we found different traction, different markets, different uses in different markets. And the real power is plugging into great sponsors and great developers and letting them use their brand and their assets to raise capital directly from people.
And obviously, one of the general solicitation rules have obviously changed since you obviously started Fundrise. How has that helped or kind of opened up your model to potentially the more institutional aspect?
It's going to allow us to scale more quickly. It's going to allow us to distribute it more often. What we found is that the institutional investor tends to be later coming into these types of investments. Somebody who is investing on their own behalf can make a decision. There's no committees, there's no groups. So I think what will happen is the broad-based advertising that's now going to be legal is going to bring a lot of high net worth, maybe a lot of family offices. And I think institutional investors, after the first year or two, as they get comfortable with returns, structures, rights, will start to come in.
And one question on kind of investors digging down, doing the due diligence. How much do you actually reveal? Because if you're going out to unaccredited investors or the smaller accredited investors, how much do you reveal of your own personal kind of wealth or your own track record? How much do you actually give over?
So we have lots of documentation. We're about transparency. We think the best way to deal with anything is to be public. On the first sets of deals, we say how much the developer has into the deal. We say we're guaranteed on the debt. We don't put up personal financials, but there's a lot of information in the deal. And what we found is with most developers, you call a few people, you can get a sense of their reputation. And in particular, I think this is going to allow more transparency into reputation. So firms that have consistently done well and have broad-based support and a broad-based investor base will be able to amplify that.